Are you looking for your next opportunity in the workforce? Look no further. UPS Jobs Kentucky is now hiring at upsjobsky.com. Right now, we are offering up to $18.50 an hour. You may even be eligible for a program that helps you graduate college completely debt-free and could also include a $325 a month living allowance paid directly to you. Follow us at UPS Jobs Kentucky and apply today at upsjobsky.com.
There's nothing more important than a child's health. That's why Body Armor Sports Drink is proud to partner with Walmart and Children's Miracle Network Hospitals, raising funds for 156 children hospitals across the U.S. Children's hospitals are on the front lines when it comes to protecting the health of our future generations. But they are not alone. Please join Body Armor Sports Drink to support the cause. Together, when we change kids' health, we change the future. Go to ChildrensMiracleNetworkHospitals.org to donate and learn more. That's ChildrensMiracleNetworkHospitals.org.
GE Appliances is hiring full-time for all shifts. Join our manufacturing team and make up to $660 per week. Apply today at MakeItAtThePark.com. Make a difference. Make it at GE Appliance Park.
Head over to the GE Appliances Podcast Center on ESPNLouisville.com. Time now for Stockton Mortgage Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Dan and Mike.
Welcome in, all of our listeners and all in the studio. It's a beautiful, beautiful day out. I think the humidity is going to catch up with us, Dan, and neither one of us care much for that. I'm not so sure anybody really cares for that.
Well, you've got to get your walk in this afternoon. You might be dripping a little bit when that's over.
Well, I go over to Westport Road and at Tom Sawyer Park, and that's where I walk in the mornings with have walked with a couple really – some really good friends of mine. So I can't get all that in and do some homework prior to the show. So since
you do homework for the show?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to impress you.
You have impressed me. Yeah. You've come up with some real nuggets here lately.
And it's kind of like a scouting report, you know. And oh, by the way, did you ever keep any of those scouting reports?
No.
Wow. I kept them for the hell of it.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. They always said, let's collect them, remember? You had to turn them in.
No, mine went in the trash.
Well, you'd never read the damn thing anyway.
As soon as the game was over.
So I've got a handful of them. They're interesting. I got a handful of them. You know, it's got my name up in the corner, and it's, you know, they were mimeographed. But yep. It's the real scouting report. I think one was with Pete, against Pete, and one was against Ohio State in the NCAA regional finals.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to bring him in show
bring
to
one
you.
In. Yeah,
I'm
going like
to bring him in
it.
Show to you.
Let me tell you what my scouting report on the LSU Pete Maravich game would have been. Good luck. That would have been my scouting report.
I can't remember ever seeing your name alongside his defensively.
No.
Well, I told you the story about when I was with the original Charlotte Hornets, and I got the staff got cleaned out, and Alan Bristow, the GM, took over coaching, and he brought your guy in. What's your guy's name?
Hanslick
in as an assistant. So. Alan only needed one assistant. Gene had two, Tom Neselke, longtime NBA coach, and myself. So Tom got – he was gone. I don't think he had a third year on his contract or second year, whatever it was. I did. So they put me out to do the scouting report. And, you know, I took the challenge, and I wanted, you know, to meet a lot of people on the road, but I took the challenge because I had done scouting reports before in college, and we had done them previously for the Hornets. So I took my model that was pretty standard, but it was a model, and I did it. I'd see the game, for example, I'd see the game in L.A. Okay, I'm out ahead of the team in L.A. I'd see the game, go back to the hotel, write it up right afterwards, write it up, make sure it's where I want it to be, and then fax it back to the office. Simple, right? I mean, it took time. I mean, you know, you had to go through your notes. So I found out later, after all that effort, damn, for like 2 months, man, I'm ahead of the team. I'm thinking, well, You know, I'm doing it the right way.
Yep.
Okay. And I find out that when the scouting report came in and they went to practice the shoot around to talk about the opponent that mm-hmm. night, that they tore the top page off, threw the rest of it away, and just read who was playing, the names, like Dan Issel, David Thomas, whoever it was, he's playing center, you got him. It wasn't like, look, right now he's playing very well, he's really using the right side of the floor, or whatever it was I saw, okay, and I stole from other scouts at the game, you know, you exchange ideas, and they just threw it away. I was steaming, man, but I wasn't steaming enough to quit my job.
You still like that paycheck.
Yeah, I did.
For those who haven't been, you said there was basically a template. And for those who have never played basketball or coached basketball, kind of give us an idea of what that template looked like. Like, first of all, as you just said, you write down who the starters are, who the rest of the roster is, and you might make a comment
about
each player. So go ahead.
After you make the comment, the starting lineup in your comment page. The comments were short and sweet.
Like what he can do,
what he's doing now,
what he likes to do.
Yeah, I think the important thing is, because you play everybody so many times, it's what is he doing now? What is he getting done now? What is he not doing? You know, does he look tired? Is he giving an effort? Is he playing mostly on the right-hand side? Just short and sweet, because everybody after a while knows people in the league. And everybody knows different sets. So you turn that page over. That's your cover page.
Right.
Then you get into detail about – they had an offensive set called Horns. You remember that. And college guys use it now. And they have, of course, the UCLA set where they ducked in at the low post and ran some things off the high post. Then you would have the Bulls would have the triangle set. Mm-hmm. And then there would be a couple teams with – wouldn't have many sets at all. Okay, they freelanced it.
Yeah, that's why it was almost impossible to scout us when we were playing, because we had no set plays. It was all a passing game, and you know, it was predicated on where the ball went and things like that. But I think you just hit on one thing, and this is what I always thought was the most important part of a scouting report, and that is to get the calls.
If they
call a play, what play are they going to run? And so that was it in my mind. That was the most important thing on there.
And those are the calls. You're sitting courtside typically. In L.A., you were back with, you know, where the radio people are, which was about 10 rows up from the floor.
Yeah.
The scouts were in that type of an area too. But basically, you were courtside. So it was funny. You might have one scout or four scouts, depends. And you would exchange. Now, what was that call? What did he make the horn signal, the hand signal,
sure.
Or was a finger down? And you try to pay attention to the bench. But saying that, they were shrewd enough most places. You go to Denver. Okay, I'm using you as an example. Let's say New York, because you ran a passing game, which was – passing game's passing game. I mean, you know, it's hard to say anything, but look, here's what they're going to do. They're going to pass it and cut, and they're going to – anytime they want, break it off and try to score. Okay. But when you went to Cleveland, let's say, and you're scouting Cleveland or you're scouting their opponent, they would sit you opposite of the team – that you were scouting so that you couldn't pick up the calls, okay? And the Hornets did it too, all right? But now when Bristow coached the team, and hey, look, it was just passing games, so there weren't any calls.
Right.
Because I did some work for Milwaukee when they were coaching it. I would call Lee Rose up after the game. I said, Coach, I'll do all this right now. It's done. I'll fax it to you. But you know how they play. They just freelance it. Mm-hmm. He goes, I know.
Yeah.
He said, I'm more interested in who's doing what right now than the play call. So you might have four or five pages, depends, you know, at both ends of the floor. Some teams are trickier defensively, not your team, not the Nuggets, but some teams would rotate differently. They would double. For example, were they doubling Dan Issel at the low post on the catch, on the pass, or on the dribble, right?
Right.
For those who don't, this is basketball lingo. I may be going too deep in the weeds, but it's simple. When you're going to double team a guy, depends on what he does best.
Right.
You get him before he gets the ball.
Yeah.
And the whole purpose is to get him to get rid of the ball, right?
Right. Yeah. And it depends on how good an offensive player he is. I mean, if you're going to double team Kareem, you're going to double team Kareem on the pass into him. You want to have two guys there as soon as he catches the ball. If you're going to double team somebody who isn't quite as proficient offensively, but you still want him to give up the ball, you might do it on the catch. But depending on who the low post player is, you can do it, or you cannot double team him at all if he can't score.
Yeah, you're not afraid of him. You play behind him, and you don't worry about it. The other thing that was starting to come into the league at that time was a mid post position for the five man.
Right.
Of course, now. Most of them play mid-post, and they're mostly the big guys are involved on the outside. But even back then, like Cartwright when he was with the Bulls and they were rolling, you know, he was a mid-post guy out of the triangle.
Right.
And but some guys would prefer to be low, try to kick him off the block, and then you'd watch that. You'd say, well, if you let him stand on the block, he's going to kill you, but if you make him take two steps off, it looks like – you know, put all these things down in writing. And then, of course, you drew the play up, and it was – if you did it right, it took time, okay? It would take – now, if you scouted Philly a month ago and you're back in Philly, you pretty much take stuff and you decide when you eyeball the team, right, that they're not doing much different. And I always thought the most important thing was how a guy played, with what kind of effort he was playing now from the previous time.
That's a good point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you see him particularly in your division enough, you understand how this guy plays, with what kind of energy. Does he play well without the ball? And it's a guess. But, I mean, the plays are the plays, okay?
Yeah.
But it's all about the guys making the plays out of the offense, okay?
We when we upset Seattle, we were the number 8 seed when we had Dikembe and LaPhonso Ellis and Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf and all of that. And we got beat double figures the first two games in Seattle. The first game we got beat, they had the best record in the NBA. The first game we got beat 20-some points, and the second game we got beat in the teens. And so now we're playing game 3 in McNichols back in Denver. So we come out for our shoot-around. Seattle had just finished their shoot-around. We come out for our shoot-around, and one of the assistant coaches had left his scouting report on a seat, a front row seat. So we saw it, we got it, we sent it back to the locker room, and about 10 minutes later, here comes the trainer for Seattle, and he is looking all over the arena for the scouting report. And we knew most of the stuff that was in it, but what we really used as motivation was any of the negative stuff was in the scouting report, like Dikembe's a great defensive player, but he couldn't score if you left him out at halftime. You know, you use that negative stuff for motivation that was in that. So we had their whole scouting report going into game number 3.
You know, that used to be back in college when I got into college coaching. Of course, scouting was more valuable because you played a team maybe once or twice, and you could go look at them. Now they can't go scout them except off tape. So assistant coaches would go out and scout and write up a report. And I know there were a lot of coaches that would plant dummy scouting reports.
No.
Oh, yeah, would leave them because, they knew that they had shoot around, then you had shoot around.
Well, I want to go back to what you just said. You can't scout in person?
No, not in college anymore, no.
Why?
Money.
Huh.
Yeah, money. They do it all off tape now. Yeah.
Well, and I guess, you know.
Now, when you get to the NCAA, it's ironic. You get to the NCAA or the SEC, they will allow one of your coaches to come to the game before you, which is typically who you play.
Because you're already there.
You're already there.
I got you. Yeah. I got you. Of course, being able to scout off a tape is much better in today's game than it was 20, 30 years ago.
Sure.
When
you
got some black and white grainy tape that you had to watch.
And you can freeze it now to where it's very clear. You tried to freeze it, you know, years ago, and it got real blurry. You didn't know who in the hell you were watching, right? I mean, it was crazy. But anyway, at times I'm watching the playoffs this year in Portland with their guards, Lillard and
McCollum,
particularly Lillard. I'm thinking, you know, if I'm coaching this team and I'm trying to set my defense, how in the world do I set my defense when this kid comes across midcourt about three steps and he just raises up and drains it, okay? I mean, how do you set your defense? I mean, it's crazy sometimes the distance, the depth these guys have on their tray.
Yeah, and one of the things that bugs me to death is you watch defensive players, perimeter defensive players, and they will back up, and it must be human nature or something. They will back up, the defender will, behind the 3-point line.
Just right behind.
So that the offensive player can get right to the 3-point line. You know, next time you watch an NBA game or a college game, watch the perimeter defenders. Instead of stopping a foot in front of the 3-point line to start the defense, they come down and they set up a foot behind the 3-point line and let the offensive player get right to the line.
A lot of coaches will teach. Hopefully it comes through to your players. Heels on the line. I know I've heard that expression in college basketball. Heels on the line. And it doesn't always.
It never works. It must be something mental.
And the other thing when shooting the tray that I'm mystified by, and because we've seen it since the ABA days, right?
Yeah.
I'll be watching a game, and I think that his foot's on the line. Have you ever experienced that? And the arm will go up, and the other arm will go up. I mean, it's got to be minuscule, the difference between this guy's toe and the line. And the referee's got that good of an eye to – I think they give him – if they get close, they don't care in the NBA. If it looks like he's beyond the arc, give it to him.
Exactly.
Have you noticed that? Watch that when the NBA plays again. I mean, some are obvious, but some are right up against it. And I don't know how they tell whether they're on it or not. No way.
I got you. Yeah.
What about the trade in the NBA? Wow.
What's wrong with Bledsoe? I think Bledsoe's a decent player.
Yes.
Mike, when you wind up going to four different teams in what, 4 years? There's got to be something going on there.
Well, he's known as a defensive player, okay? But his offensive production really dropped off this year with New Orleans. And New Orleans traded him to Milwaukee traded him to New Orleans, and they got Holiday, okay?
Right.
Who's a streak shooter, but a heck of a defender. It looks to me like Bledsoe's a streak
Same
shooter.
Thing. Yeah, a heck of a defender.
So maybe it's personalities, or maybe it's the money they're making. You never know in the NBA. You know that. Guys get traded because of what they're making and the length left on their contract, right?
Because, as we've said many times before, the contracts have to match up. They have to be within 10%, not counting the draft choices. So, who was it that went with Bledsoe?
The Valanciunas.
He went to
Pels. To the Pels.
But who went with Stephen?
Stephen Adams.
Big center. So what that means is that their salaries, Adams and Bledsoe, had to be within 10% of the other guy to make that trade. And then I think they switched draft choices in there, too.
And that's interesting, switching the draft choices. Now Memphis has the 17th overall pick, but I think they have Memphis also has they're exchanging second-round picks, if I'm reading this right. The Grizzlies, Memphis Grizzlies, move up to 10 spot in the lottery. Now, it says in the article I'm reading, it says that, and I read it this morning, it's a deep draft. But saying that.
Not Memphis. Memphis doesn't.
The deal moves the Grizzlies into the lottery at number 10.
Okay. All right.
Of a deep 2020 draft. They think they have a nice core of young players. Memphis could have, it says, three first-round picks in 22, including protected picks via the Jazz and the Lakers, which means I think if they're inside 10 or inside the lottery they back
yeah,
up.
Yeah, you can protect it. Some are protected just from the first three picks. So you can protect it, to whatever level you want to.
And for New Orleans, ball guy, Lonzo Ball, the first, he's a restricted free agent at guard. I think I might let him go. I'm not a big fan of his. But they're in the marketplace for a point guard. Again, Kyle Lowry from Portland is available. He's an all-star. He is available. And they could sign him. If they re-sign restricted free agent Josh Hart, then they don't need Lonzo Ball. So, I mean, it's kind of a complicated trade. It looks like they're just passing contracts around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, two big guys.
Although Velikudas can play.
Yes, he can.
I like him.
Yep, he can.
Solid
player.
Yeah, I did. I did a Nuggets game a couple years ago against him, and I was pretty impressed with the way he plays.
29 years old, Valanciunas is 29. He's not your floor spacer that they want, but now he has shot. He was 21 of 57 this year, 36%. Deep in the Trey area with Memphis. He's coming off his most productive season, 17 points, 12 rebounds. He averaged a double-double. I know why you liked him. He averaged a double-double.
Well, do you think this trade has anything to do with keeping Zion happy? Because he has expressed some concerns about them being able to build a winner. So I guess you have to at least do something so that he thinks you're out there trying to improve the team.
Well, it's not going to hurt him. The team's got some young guys, and Josh Hart's a very good player. I like him much better. What I've seen of him, and I don't see a lot, but when he was with the Lakers, I thought he played well. I like him better than I do Ball. And Ball's restricted. You don't have to re-sign him. You make an offer and hope somebody else, makes an offer,
right?
Or sign trade, right?
Yeah.
So here's an interesting – you asked why Bledsoe. He has 2 years left on his contract, $18.1 million in 21-22 and $19.4 million the following season. Although only 2.9 of that is guaranteed with a full amount triggered to guarantee – June 30th, 2022. So there's a window there where he could be traded to somebody and they can take his contract on, which he has been, and they don't have to guarantee the whole deal.
Buy him out for a couple of million. Well, I would think if I'm getting ready to be with my fourth team in 4 or 5 years, I'd be waiting for that to be triggered. I don't think anybody's going to pay him that kind of money.
And Valanciunas is coming off his best year. We talked about a double-double. So he was paid $14 million this season, and the following year he's going to make $14 million. By NBA standards, a guy averaged double-double, that's pretty cheap labor.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
By NBA standards.
Now, didn't he play with Toronto?
Yes, he did. I think so, when they won the championship.
So, but he was with Memphis this year?
Yes.
Okay.
I think came over as a free agent or in part of a trade.
Okay.
Had to pull that up.
All right. Well, when I did the game I was talking about, he was with
Toronto.
He was with Toronto. Then.
So was Kyle Lowry, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was with Toronto. They won the championship.
Yeah.
Dwayne Casey, our guy,
coached
him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a good ball club, and it just disintegrated. I mean, just like...
Well, it disintegrated because the best player left town. That's...
Well, yeah, that always helps, doesn't it? Kawhi Leonard leaving kind of in the...
They're all on the block. We did make our first trade last night after the game. They announced that Chafin, the left-handed relief pitcher, had been traded to the Oakland A's. And in return, and you were talking about pitching earlier, in return, we got an outfielder who's hitting 300 in AAA. So, I mean, he must be okay.
He got a shot.
He's okay. In addition to that, we got a pitcher... from back from Oakland, who is 0-2 and has an ERA of 6.71,
designated for the minor leagues.
So I don't think we exactly robbed the Oakland A's on that one.
You know, I thought this was interesting. I know you have some things to talk about, but the Olympics in baseball, okay, and softball, but softball kind of plays into this at the end. But it's almost like the Olympics have had a love-hate relationship with baseball over the years. They started in Melbourne, Australia in 56, but it was 84 in the Los Angeles Olympics with the first baseball tournament, although it wasn't an official sport. Now, baseball to me is not universal as basketball, but it's more universal because of the play in the players from the Dominican, Hispanic speaking areas that just love baseball. I mean, it's more of a world sport. Cuba's been unbelievable. Japan's been good.
Yeah, I think Asia baseball is gained some traction, certainly in South America. But Mike, we're talking about baseball, and I know that it's one of the four major sports in the United States, and we probably are biased, but I'm looking at something right now on the NBC Sports Channel, and I have no idea what you even call this.
It's played like, on a basketball floor.
It's on a basketball floor. What's this called?
Handball.
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 Team handball.
I'm so intrigued by it, I had to look up the rules because it looks awesome.
Are you kidding me?
That looks like so much fun.
Yeah, it looks like a game you'd play at a picnic or something. It doesn't look like an Olympic sport, for crying out loud. And they're looking at softball. And by the way, the Americans lost earlier today,
softball.
To Japan, 2-0. So Japan gets the gold and U.S. The silver in softball. But if you're going to make up a game like this to be an Olympic sport, and you're going to tell me softball and baseball are in the Olympics on a trial basis? That's a joke. Well, handball. I thought handball was on a court where you slap the ball with your hand.
That's our version.
Isn't that
of handball.
Yeah, racket, yeah. On a racket.
Well, yeah, but racketball and handball. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just racketball without the paddle to me. What
yeah,
you're talking
yeah, sure,
about?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
That you're telling me that doesn't look like a ton of fun, and it deserves to be an Olympic sport at least
no,
for a little bit.
No, it looks like a ton of fun. There's no way it deserves to be an Olympic sport
over baseball and softball.
Jeez,
come on, Charles.
I mean, baseball and softball are in right now. I get it's a trial period, but we won't want it now because softball got silver today, so they might not want it back anyways. Because we didn't win the gold, so people might not want it back.
Yeah, but softball, particularly women's softball, is so big in this country and big in many places in this world. You know, why wouldn't you want it? I mean, Tokyo at least decided that those two were part of five sports that they deemed event-based, and they were going to let them in. But they dropped them in 16, I think it was after 16. They said the two sports didn't feature enough worldwide participation, that in baseball's case the best players weren't participating. Well,
and playing on a basketball court with a net at both ends, and girls are throwing a ball trying to get, that is a global sport.
It reminds me of basketball. We're watching it. They got a little weave out front. They got a little pick and roll. Okay? And it's I can understand water polo, and I watched it the other day. We described that. I mean, that's hard. You have to tread water, and you have to be able to jump out of a treading position. But, I mean, this is I don't know.
By the way, Spain is beating France 22-18. What was the spread on this game, Charles? Do you know?
Okay, I have to kind of give some support here. It is believed that nearly 20 million people play handball, and it started in 1917.
But that's not the handball we know.
You're talking about the handball on the court. You're not talking about.
I am talking about the handball here. I'm looking it up on Google.
How many people?
20 million.
Really?
Yeah.
Where do they? It must be Euros.
No, it's I couldn't find the exact countries. I'm just going to throw out America is probably the number one country in the world just to play handball.
I have never seen this game before in my life, and you just made that stat up.
No, 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 no. I didn't make the stat up, but I don't know the countries. But I'm telling you, this has interested me so much, I'm looking to see if WVU has a club sport because I want to play it now.
Really?
And then you can come up and watch me play. And then you'll find the love for the game as I have grown in the last 40 minutes.
Charles, I love you. I wouldn't walk across the street to watch you play this stuff. Hey,
Charles, that's cold-blooded. That's just the way he is. He tells it like it is, you know?
Yes.
You had some things you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, but now you've talked for the last 15 minutes. I forgot what they were.
I know you got notes. Mark Story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Mark Story. I found this very interesting. Now, you said you'd heard this story before. Story had a piece in the Lexington Herald Leader this morning that I found very interesting, and it was kind of discussing if you would take – would a college be more concerned about – you know, they're talking about Texas and Oklahoma coming to the SEC. And would a school be more concerned about taking the money, or being in a league where you could build a program? Now, Kentucky's basketball is going to be, whatever league they're in, they're going to be top of the heap. But talking about the football team, would you rather take the money, or would you invite two teams into your conference that you're going to have a really hard time beating? And Story said in 2014, he had a discussion with C.M. Newton, who we both loved. C.M. was terrific. But he had, in the 90s, he had a secret conversation about UK leaving the SEC and going to the ACC. And, of course, that was before the days of Clemson. I guess Florida State was pretty good still. But
no, I don't think either one of them were in. I think the Florida State was an independent. Clemson was good. I think the power at that time pretty much was North Carolina State.
In football. Okay.
Yeah, and maybe Clemson. Danny Ford had a lot of success.
Yeah, that's a good point. But anyway, the conversation was, should Kentucky leave the SEC and go to the ACC, where they would be more likely, let's put it that way, to build a football power than they would staying in the SEC. And according to Story, the decision was made in conjunction with CM and the powers that be at Kentucky that they'd rather stay in the SEC and have the money than go over to the ACC and build a powerful football program. So his point was this discussion about, you know, would Kentucky want Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC? That decision was made years and years ago when they decided to go for the money and stay in the SEC.
And I find it very interesting. Everyone is talking about Texas, and I think that's because of A&M and their pushback against Texas. But, you know, the team that's really good is Oklahoma.
Right.
If you look at them, I researched them. They got a lot of people coming back. They've had success. Texas is the one that's struggling. They're on, like, their third coach since, what's his name?
Strong.
The guy came in. He's now at North Carolina.
Oh, Mac.
Yeah.
Mac Brown.
Mac Brown left.
Yeah.
I think this might be their – I know it's their second coach. Might be their third coach.
I think
coach.
It's their third, yeah.
So
I think it's
their
third.
It's their third. Charlie Strong, Tom Herman, Sarkisian.
Yeah.
And Tom Herman had a lot of success at Houston. Couldn't pull it together at Texas. So we're looking now. We're making all this noise about Texas. We're showing them the left hand, okay? And the right hand is the one that will kick your butt because Oklahoma's got a better team right now.
And what I love now is all the speculation about where everybody's going. And, what's the pack? I think if you're not one of the Power Four, I'm reducing it by one, because with Texas and Oklahoma gone, that's not a power conference anymore. And so
the remnants don't meet your criterion?
No. And so if you're not already in one of the Power Four conferences and you don't have, as you say, Michael, a lot of eyeballs to bring to the table, you're in big, big trouble. I mean, good luck to you. I read a story. I think his name is Jamie Pollard, maybe. I think I've got that right. Is the AD at Iowa State. And he sent out a video to season ticket holders or just fans of Iowa State. And he said he hoped that Texas and Oklahoma would stay in the league until 2025. First of all, what's the old saying? Hope is not a plan. That's number one. And number two, if he thinks Texas and Oklahoma are staying in the Big 12 until 2025, good luck with that.
And to your point and my point, what's my favorite saying? You take the king's gold, you fight the king's wars.
Yep.
Texas better be careful what they wish for. They're not set up right now, I don't think, to participate at the top of the SEC. Oklahoma could be. You could build a case for Oklahoma to make a run, depending on how you schedule. But are one of the main things these schools – SEC schools, not only eyeballs and television revenue, recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Is there enough talent in the state of Texas to fill the need for all these teams? Or does it go beyond that? Does ESPN, they're going to have plenty of slots to fill, okay? With a league like that. I mean, you know, they're going to play every game all the time, all day type deal. Does it extend to anywhere? I mean, does the Texas-Oklahoma brand with the SEC brand pretty much keep allow any one of these teams to recruit anywhere?
Yeah, and I think you answered your own question about is there enough talent in Texas, and I think that's one of the reasons that Texas has struggled recently, because not only do you have all the schools in Texas, Baylor's pretty good, Texas A&M, TCU isn't bad, but you have outside schools coming in and recruiting, taking some of the top-level players. I mean, that's why, Nick Saban wasn't speaking to the Texas High School Coaches Association by chance. That didn't happen to be just one of the things that popped up on his calendar. I mean, he went there to talk for a reason. And if there's
he went for free, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If there's a kid, in Texas that Alabama wants, I'd say there's a pretty good chance they're going to get him. So there probably isn't enough. But I think Thursday, the SEC is going to get together and address this. And so I would I don't know if that's too soon to take a vote, but I think this is definitely going to happen.
Well, what do you make of the SEC being so quiet? Are they being quiet? Are they being quiet because potential issues with these other leagues, legally or whatever, or are they being quiet because there's another team they're courting, or everybody's courting them, but they really would like to add? I mean, what's your take on that?
I think they're being quiet because they can be. I mean, if they get Texas, if the SEC gets Texas and Oklahoma, they can almost write their own check as far as TV rights are concerned, and they don't have to be out there. I mean, they're not in any jeopardy. They're going to be the number one. That's why I said the other day, I think the most powerful guy in college football today is Commissioner Stanky. He can. You know, he doesn't have to be out there like some of these Big 12 people, you know, hoping that Texas and Oklahoma say that. He doesn't need to say anything.
Well, it was acknowledged a few years ago. Mike Slive headed up the SEC, a really successful and well-thought-of commissioner. He and Jim Delaney at the Big Ten were considered the driving power base in all college sports. Now, Delaney has retired. They got a new commissioner, and I'm sure he's a good commissioner, but he can't walk right into Delaney's status. Mm-hmm. Mike Slive retired, and Sankey came in. So now, I mean, the NCAA college football is driven by Sankey and the SEC. There's no question.
Yeah, there's no question at all, and it'll be interesting. I think in my mind, it's a done deal. It's just how soon does it happen? I guess it could happen not this year, but it could even happen as soon as next year. All they got to do is write a check, and legally they're out of the Big 12.
That's pretty scary, because that means that other leagues, there are, you know, like the Big 10 that could do that. The Pac-12 may benefit from this, and they need help.
Yeah, well, I told you, I've said this before, my favorite sports show on radio or television is Pardon the Interruption with Michael Wilbon. I know Michael a little bit. I don't know Tony Kornheiser, but he seems just like a crotchety old man to me. That I like that. But they're also bright people, and they were talking about the Big Ten, Michael, going to get UCLA and Southern Cal because of the market that would bring, the Los Angeles market that would bring into play in the Big Ten. So I don't think, conferences used to be built on geographic location. I think that's out the window. I think, you know, UCLA and Southern Cal could be in the Big Ten, and teams in the East could be out West. I don't think that's any drawback whatsoever anymore.
And a spinoff of that, if you believe that, a spinoff of that is little mini pods for non-revenue sports. I mean, there's no reason to be flying or driving teams that are non-revenue clear across the country to play. That's one of West Virginia's issues, is they've got to go all the way out there. I mean, football is a one-time shot, and there's just one football team. And I guess that economically they've found it's not easy. So if UCLA, Southern California, if they go to the Big Ten, where does that – how do they organize? Do they let – those schools, non-revenue sports, stay in the Pac-12? Does the Pac-12 let them do that?
Yeah.
Or does the Big Ten say, look, we're going to reorganize all our non-revenue sports, all our Olympic sports?
No, it's all, what do they do with handball?
Water polo.
There are a lot of questions out there that can't be answered right now, but they'll be answered in the future for sure, because this is where it's all headed.
Here's what I want you to think about. I'm going to draw a correlation. And I think this kind of, in my correlation, in my mind, this tells me where the Power Four, as you say, maybe five, but probably four in the future. 10, 15, 20 years ago, the MAC was one hell of a football league. I mean, Roethlisberger, there's plenty of running backs that have come out of Toledo, the Western Central Michigans. Miami at one time in the world was known as the cradle of coaches. Okay, Woody Hayes.
Yeah.
Schnellenberger.
Schnellenberger.
And what's his name is coaching Jackson now. Jacksonville coached Ohio State. He's coaching Jacksonville Jags now.
That was at Ohio State.
Yeah. And Urban Meyer.
Urban Meyer, he started in, and Nick Saban started in the MAC, okay?
Yeah.
At Kent State.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was a hell of a football league, really. A lot of talent. Well, all of a sudden, in the last 10, 15 years, Cincinnati decided they want to build a football program. They started recruiting very effectively in Ohio, and they didn't try to steal the Ohio State recruits, the ones Ohio State wanted, but they thought there was enough depth in the state to be able to come behind them, get quality players in the second and the third slot. Michigan tried to do that, not as successful, but Cincinnati did a great job. Kentucky now has been, for the last 5-7 years under Stoops, been very effective in Ohio getting guys like that.
Right.
Okay. And have built their program. So what has that done to the MAC? The talent level of the MAC, the teams have gone backwards. because they used to get really good guys because Ohio State and Michigan didn't see them, and the other schools weren't in the mix. I mean, they didn't fear Pittsburgh. They didn't fear Indiana in football. Now you got Kentucky coming in there. Cincinnati's built a reputation. You got Alabama coming in there. I mean, it's very interesting. I think that's the way what's going to happen in college football. The teams aren't in your Power Four, as you said, or Power Five. They're going to deteriorate that way into a very secondary league as far as talent.
Yeah, I think you're 100% on the money. I think that those schools aren't going to quit playing football. They're still going to have football teams. They're still going to have tailgate parties. They're still going to have homecoming. But if you're a highly recruited, or maybe not even highly recruited, if you're a four-star, maybe even a three-star,
yes,
do you want to go to some place outside of the Power Four conference with all the exposure they're going to get and all of the chances to use your following and
your name, image, and likeness?
Absolutely. So these schools won't quit playing football, but I think you're absolutely right. I don't think they'll be nearly as competitive as these power conferences are going to be.
You know, we speak of name, image, and likeness. What I want to see, I thought Calipari made a nice statement the other day. Don't know if you saw it, but he mentioned that some of the guys have already lined up opportunities in name, image, and likeness. He said, but he said, I see our team deciding to do things as a group,
mm-hmm.
and share some of this money. And he liked that because I haven't read anything about any team in this country except who was the team, a football team decided, and it wasn't a big Power Five team, that they were going to share. And the thing in Miami with the guy giving everybody
right.
500.
Right.
I'm very interested to see how that shakes out with various teams. And it does that help their winning, the winning record, their success level by
right.
sharing all this? I'm really interested in that.
I would guess, and it's purely a guess, I would guess that as long as you're talking about these deals that like are $500 or $1,000, I would guess they'll share. But let somebody come to the quarterback of Alabama and offer him a $200,000 deal. Let's see how quickly he shares that.
Yeah. What about it, Charles? You're the quarterback. Are you sharing?
Oh, no way. No way. If my offensive line does their job, then maybe I'll consider it, but no way.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, quarterbacks buy the offensive line Rolexes and gifts for blocking for them. Why wouldn't the college guy do that? I mean, think about that.
Yeah, he could. He could. Hey, this is your lucky day. The handball game just went off, and now water polo is on.
Now
I hope I can keep your attention to the radio show the next hour with water polo being on the television.
This is the game that intrigues me because they try to build a triangle like the triangle offense, and then these guys and gals got to stay afloat, man. They can't touch bottom. They got to tread water.
I got to tell you, when you were talking about treading water, there in my hometown in Batavia, the swimming pool is the quarry, and it is literally an old gravel quarry. And but on one end of it, they cemented the bottom and it made it shallow. And so to be able to go in the quarry side, the end of it, you had to swim the length of the quarry. You had to pass a test. And so I couldn't swim worth a lick, but I decided I was going to try to pass the test. And the test was you started at one end of the quarry, you swam halfway across, and of course I was just floating and dog paddling.
Dog paddle, yeah.
And you had to stop in the middle and tread water for 60 seconds. Then you had to go on to the other end. And once you did that, then you could go into the deep end of the pool with all of your friends, and you didn't have to be with the four-year-olds in the end of the pool. And so I take my test, and I'm scared to death that I'm going to flunk it. And so I dog paddle halfway across, and I said, and the lifeguard said, okay, now you have to stop and tread water. So I stop, and I realized I could touch bottom. So I stood on the bottom and flapped my arms back and forth for 60 seconds, and then dog paddled the rest of the way, and I got to swim in the deep end of the quarry.
And with that note, the Dan Issel dog paddle, we will take a break. And after the break, we have Reggie Hansen, former Kentucky player, former assistant at Kentucky. And we're going to catch up with Reggie.
Give us your...
Are you looking for your next opportunity in the workforce? Look no further. UPS Jobs Kentucky is now hiring at upsjobsky.com. Right now, we are offering up to $18.50 an hour. You may even be eligible for a program that helps you graduate college completely debt-free and could also include a $325 a month living allowance paid directly to you. Follow us at UPS Jobs Kentucky and apply today at upsjobsky.com.
There's nothing more important than a child's health. That's why Body Armor Sports Drink is proud to partner with Walmart and Children's Miracle Network Hospitals, raising funds for 156 children hospitals across the U.S. Children's hospitals are on the front lines when it comes to protecting the health of our future generations. But they are not alone. Please join Body Armor Sports Drink to support the cause. Together, when we change kids' health, we change the future. Go to ChildrensMiracleNetworkHospitals.org to donate and learn more. That's ChildrensMiracleNetworkHospitals.org.
GE Appliances is hiring full-time for all shifts. Join our manufacturing team and make up to $660 per week. Apply today at MakeItAtThePark.com. Make a difference. Make it at GE Appliance Park.
Head over to the GE Appliances Podcast Center on ESPNLouisville.com.